him in the cramped quarters. The holding cells were in the basement and on the side, facing the street, which meant that Sebastian Leopold was barely 50 feet away from him. He had never been this close to his family's alleged killer. Yeah, maybe he had, when he'd apparently dissed this guy at the 7-Eleven. He turned away when he saw two plain clothes and a uniform that he knew. Though he had changed a lot since he left the force, he doubted they could miss him. Stepping into an alley, he leaned against the wall. His anxiety level was riding high. Headaches came and went. His brain grew tired because it just never stopped. Not even when he was asleep. It was as though his subconscious was actually his conscious. For a man who never forgot anything, it was difficult for him to remember who he used to be and how he had gotten to be what he was now. He closed his eyes. The gift came to me when I was all of 22 years old. I was a middling college football player who walked onto an NFL team carrying only fair ability but a ferocious chip on my shoulder. I stepped on the field for the first game of the season after playing my butt off during the preseason and surviving the final cut. I'm on the kickoff team. My job is simple. Sacrifice my body to create mayhem and holes in the return team so other guys can make the stop. I run my ass down the field. I'm about to make mayhem. I'm running so hard that snot is flying from my nose and spit from my mouth. I'm being paid more money than I've ever made in my life. I aim to earn it. I'm about to lay some dude out, stone cold out. And that's all I remember. Dwayne LaCroix, a rookie out of LSU, was 5 inches shorter and 50 pounds lighter than me, but apparently a force to be reckoned with because he laid me out on that field with a hit I never saw coming. The dude blew me up, as they say in the NFL. He would be out of the league in 4 years with both knees devoid of cartilage, his left shoulder pared down to nothing but bone on bone, and his bank account overdrawn. He was currently residing in a max prison in Shreveport for crimes committed against his fellow humans, and he would die there one day, either soon or distant. But on that day, he walked away, fist pumping and sauntering like the cock over the hens, while I lay on the field, unconscious. And after that collision, nothing for me would ever be the same. Not a damn thing. Chapter 7. Decker opened his eyes when he heard the commotion across the street. Doors were being thrown open. Cars were squealing as rubber kissed pavement way too hard. Sirens sounded, raised voices, metal clattering on metal, heavy boots on concrete. He stepped clear of the alley and looked across the street as patrol cars, sirens wailing, poured out of the precinct's underground garage. More officers in plain clothes had burst out the front door of the precinct and raced to cruisers and unmarked cars parked on the street. He continued to watch as a bulky SWAT truck lumbered down a side alley on the precinct side of the street, made its turn, and then the driver slammed his foot on the gas, and the metal rhino charged down the road. Decker inched closer to the street, joining a bunch of citizens who had appeared from the crevices of their lives to watch this disturbing spectacle. He listened to the others to see if they knew what was happening, but everyone there seemed to be stunned by what they were seeing. Decker hurried across the street when he saw the man emerge from the precinct. "Pete?" said Decker. The man was dressed in a suit with stains on the sleeve. He was in his early 60s, very near retirement, slightly stooped, and with combed-over gray hair. He stopped and looked up at him. Decker could see that Pete Rourke had his service weapon out and was checking the mag. "Amos, what the hell are you doing here?" "I was just passing by. What's going on?" Pete turned pale and looked ready to collapse on the pavement. "Got some sicko at Mansfield High School. Walked in loaded for war and started shooting up the place. Lots of bodies. Decker, mostly kids. I gotta go." He let out a quick sob. "Shit. My grandson goes there. He's just a freshman. Don't know if he... He turned and stumbled toward his car. A light tan Malibu. Fell inside, started it up, and left tire rubber on the street. Decker watched him go. An army of cops, heading to a shot-up high school? Mansfield High, where Decker had gone 1,000 years ago. He looked around as the sounds of the sirens dissipated. The folks across the street were dispersing, returning to their slivers of existence. Many were checking their phones for news. Decker did the same, but there was nothing as yet. It was all still just happening. However, the news would pick it up, and then not let it go. Until the next shooting came along. Then they would rush headlong that way. Until the next one. Decker stared up at the door to the precinct. He wondered how many personnel would be left in the building. Surely they would have kept some behind. They had a high-profile prisoner in a cage there. He touched the bulge of the gun in his waistband. That would be a problem. A magnetometer was right inside the front door. He looked around and spotted the trash can next to the building. He walked over and lifted the top. It was barely a quarter full. Trash pickup wasn't until the end of the week, he recalled. There was a rag on top of the trash pile. He slipped out his gun, wrapped it in the rag, and set it down in the can. He looked down at his clothes. Another problem. He glanced around and saw the storefront. He had bought some things there before. A long time before. Grady's Big and Tall Shop. Well, I'm big and tall. Right now I'm bigger than I am tall. He slid out his credit card. It had a limit. A pretty low limit. But it might just be enough. He went to the shop, and the doorbell tinkled when he walked in. A well-dressed, rotund man came over to him, and then just as quickly took a step back. "Can I help you?" he said from a respectful distance. He probably thought Decker was homeless and looking to rob him. Decker took out his wallet and flashed his PI badge. He did it fast, so it looked like something else. He glanced down the street toward the precinct to add another layer to the subterfuge. Lying did not come naturally to him. And after the hit on the gridiron, his filter had been vastly reduced. So it was even harder for him not to always tell the literal truth. He instinctively craved precision and was reluctant to accept anything less than that. Yet as a policeman who often moved in the underbelly of the criminal world, he had had to prevaricate. As a detective and now a PI, he had to be able to bullshit, otherwise his job would have been impossible. He had finally struck on a method that had seemed to work. "I will lie perfectly." He said to the man, "I've been working an assignment for too long. Let myself go. Chase rats, you have to look like one. Gotta get back to civilization, understand?" The man had followed Decker's gaze to the precinct and nodded. His manner relaxed, he even smiled. "You're not the first," he said encouragingly. "We get lots of customers from the Burlington Police Department." "I've shopped here before," said Decker. "Sure, I remember you," lied the man. Decker shopped fast. Jacket size 54 extra long. Pants size 48, which was still snug, and he let his belly droop over the waistband as many out-of-shape men did. He opted against purchasing a belt. His pants were definitely not going to fall down. Luckily, his legs were long, and he could get a pair already hemmed that fit. Shirt, mammoth. Tie, cheap but effective. Shoes, size 14s. He opted for the faux leather. They pinched his feet. He didn't care. "Wouldn't happen to have a brush and an electric razor?" asked Decker, looking in the mirror.
"In our toiletry section over here."
"Briefcase?" "Accessories over here." He paid for everything on credit. When Decker asked, the clerk threw in a legal pad and some pens that he had behind the counter in a box of office supplies. "They keep cutting our budget," Decker explained. "How do we protect people if we can't even afford pens?" "It's a crying shame," said the man. "World's going to hell. You interested in a tie clip or a pocket square?" Decker took everything to the restroom, rinsed off in the sink, rolled on antiperspirant he had purchased, buzzed off much of his beard, leaving only a shallow layer of fuzz over his chin, jaw, and upper lip, trimmed and tidied his hair, dressed in his new clothes and shoes, and put the old ones in the store's bag. He walked out carrying the bag and headed back to the precinct. The tie cut into his throat, and despite the deodorant, he already felt a bit sweaty under the armpits, though the air was cool. But he didn't look like he had looked before. He hadn't looked this respectable even when he'd been a cop. He added the bag of clothes to the gun in the trash can and marched up the steps of the precinct. He knew this was stupid, insane. He hadn't been gone that long from the force. He could be recognized at any moment, like a Pete Rourke. But he didn't care, he really didn't. This was his shot, maybe his only one. He was taking it. He cleared the magnetometer. There was one young cop in the lobby manning the entrance. Decker didn't know him, and he didn't know Decker. Good and good. He walked over to the information desk. The elderly woman sitting there was obviously not in uniform. She must be a civilian. Having a uniformed officer sitting in the front desk was not a smart deployment of resources. His cover story formed in his head. Decker looked down at her. She looked up at him. Her eyes widened, perhaps simply to take in the whole of him.
"Can I help you?"
she asked. "You have a prisoner in the holding cell, Sebastian Leopold?" She blinked in confusion.
"I'm not sure what you..."
"I'd like to talk to him."
"And who are..."
"He needs counsel. I don't think anyone has been appointed to rep him yet."
"I'm not sure."
"Sixth Amendment, right to counsel. Can't be denied. Just need a few minutes with him."
"I'll have to phone."
"If you have to, you have to. But I know things are pretty hairy around here right now. So if you don't get an answer, I just need a few minutes with him." Decker lifted up his briefcase so she could see it and patted the side. "His arraignment is coming up. He'll need to be prepped for the plea. I've got some ideas."
"If you could have a seat."
Decker looked around at the police officer manning the magnetometer. He was staring at Decker, which was not good. Realizing he might have just blown a bunch of money he didn't have on lawyer-looking attire, Decker sat down in a chair bolted to the wall and waited. The old woman picked up her phone and slowly, ever so slowly, punched in numbers. Numbers. Always numbers. They had a hypnotic effect on him, sending him to places he didn't always want to go. Decker closed his eyes, and his mind began to whir back. Back to the day, no, to the exact moment when his life changed forever. Chapter 8. The crowd went berserk. Every time the hit was replayed on the Megatron, and that was often, I was told later. My helmet flew 5 feet and rolled another 6, ending at the feet of a zebra who picked it up and maybe checked inside to see if my head was still in there. I think my brain bounced against my skull multiple times like a bird trying to introduce itself to a window until its neck snaps. Yep, the crowd cheered and whooped whenever the Megatron belched out the replay. Then I was told that they stopped cheering, because I didn't get up, because I didn't move a muscle. And then someone noticed I'd stopped breathing and had also turned blue. They told me the head trainer was alternating, pounding on my chest like a punch press, attacking metal slabs, and blowing air into my mouth. Later they told me I died on the field twice, but he brought me back both times from the hereafter. They told me he was screaming in my ear, "Hang on, 95! Hang the hell on!" I was such a nobody that he knew my jersey number, but not my name. My professional football player identity was a 9 and a 5 printed on my chest. 9 and 5. Violet and brown in my counting colors mind. I never consciously assigned colors to numbers. My brain did it for me, without my permission. The collision changed everything about me, because it essentially rewired my brain. So I died, twice, and then came back, essentially as someone else. And for the longest time I thought that would be the most awful thing that would ever happen to me.
And then came that night, and those three bodies in neon blue, and the gridiron blind side dropped to a distant number 2 on the list of my personal devastations.
Excuse me, sir. Sir.
Decker opened his eyes to see the woman staring down at him. Not the old lady from behind the desk. She was far younger, maybe in her late 20s, dressed in black slacks and a light blue blouse with the top 2 buttons undone. She had a fresh complexion and an optimistic, efficient air about her. She must be very new, he thought. She wouldn't look this way in a year, or maybe even in 6 months. Dealing with scumballs all day aged you faster than the sun. He eyed the lanyard ID writing on her hip. Sally Brimmer, Public Affairs. She must have come on after he left. His luck was running great right now. Lie perfectly, Amos. You can do this. You have to do this. Every word counts. Because there will be blowback on this. Every word. So hit it. He stood and held out his hand. Yes, Ms. Brimmer? They shook hands. Hers was swallowed by his, and he hoped she didn't interpret his sweaty palm as evidence of his deceit. She said,
I was told you wanted to meet with Sebastian Leopold.
That's right. I understand he needs legal counsel.
And who do you understand that from?
Decker fought back the anxiety building in his chest, fast-framed through his mental DVR, formulated his response, and out came the words, I have a contact at the News Leader, Alex Jamerson. Heard of her?
Yeah, I have. She's good. She probably does know, and you're a lawyer?
He showed her a business card with an office address on the other side of the city that was actually the address of a law firm.
She stared down at this and then handed it back.
We've got an emergency going down.
I heard, Pete Rourke told me on the way in. Mansfield High School. His grandson goes there. I hope he's okay.
So you know Pete?
We go way back, Miss Brimmer. She sighed and looked around.
I'm not really the one who should be making this decision.
I could come back. Before she could react to this offer, he quickly added, But Leopold has to be arraigned in 48 hours, or else he gets released. I doubt anyone here wants that.
No, they don't. It's just that...
The right words flashed through Decker's mind. It was like he was reading off a teleprompter. And sending him to an arraignment without counsel, or with ill-prepared counsel, could create a legal snafu that could come back to bite the department in the ass, pardon the French. I know you don't want that either. No law-abiding citizen would. She started to nod halfway through his spiel.
You'll only need a few minutes.
All I'll need, he said. She hesitated, and he could read the vacillation in her eyes. She wanted no part of this, and was feeling boxed into making a decision. The farther he got into this lie, the more anxiety he started to feel. He drew a long breath, pushing the bile back down his throat with the exhalation. Just a few minutes, he said. Then I'll be out of here, and he won't be able to complain later. Decker truly meant this last part.
You know what he's accused of.
Yes, I know it pretty well, actually. But regardless of these heinous acts, he is entitled to counsel. And if he's found guilty, they can lethal inject him without one complaint from yours truly. That I promise. The truth will surely set you free, Amos. Her vacillation finally broke, like water from around a womb.
Okay. Follow me.
And Amos Decker followed her. Chapter 9. They rounded the corner of the hall, and there he was, a rat in a cage, at least to Decker's thinking. But that wasn't enough. He needed to be sure. Brimmer looked at Decker, and then Leopold.
There he is. I can give you 15 minutes, max.
All I'll need, replied Decker. There was a jailer there, again a guy that Decker didn't recognize. As a detective for 10 years, he hadn't mixed that much with the uniforms.
"Open it up, please,"
said Brimmer to the jailer. Keys came out and the door slid back and Decker walked into the cell and stared down at the man, who sat perched like a cat on the bunk bed.
15 minutes, okay?"
Decker nodded, but didn't look at her. Her heels tap-tapped away. Decker waited until the jailer went back to his desk at the end of the corridor before moving forward and fully focusing on the prisoner. Sebastian Leopold wasn't as big as he would have thought from Lancaster's description. Or maybe I've just gotten a lot bigger. They'd put him in an orange prison jumpsuit. His hands and feet were manacled, and the waist chain bolted to the wall. Which was a pity, because if he tried to attack Decker, Decker could just kill him in self-defense. The head turned to Decker, and he braced for some sort of recognition from Leopold. But none came. Strange, since he'd apparently dissed this guy so badly he'd taken his revenge in the slaughter of Decker's family. The eyes were bloodshot, the pupils dilated. Decker figured the cops had given him a drug test, made him pee into a bottle, taken a cheek swab for DNA, and breathalyzed him for booze. The jumpsuit had short sleeves, so the man's forearms were revealed. There was a tattoo of twin dolphins on his right arm. That was interesting. There were also drug tracks, and they looked relatively new. He wondered if the man had taken a pop before waltzing in here and copping to 3 murders. You need some extra juice to do something like that, Decker thought. Part of one finger on his left hand was gone, cut off at the first section. There was a scar on his face, a busted nose that slid 10 degrees to the left. Hands heavily calloused and strong-looking. He had done manual labor. And are those the hands that took Molly from me? Mr. Leopold, he said. Leopold continued to look at him without really seeing anything. At least, it seemed that way to Decker. Still, no recognition. And with the clean-up and cutting of beard and hair, Decker looked closer to the cop he'd been 17 months ago, when he'd allegedly dissed Leopold at the 7-Eleven. He stared into the man's face and turned on his DVR. Frame after frame raced through his mind, going back to the precise time period when he had supposedly run into the man. The date flashed up in his head, so close that it seemed to be on the other side of his eyeballs. 1 month before the murders. That's what Lancaster had said. Decker tacked on 1 week on either side of that date, just to be sure. His DVR whirred and frames flew past by the hour, by the minute. Decker had been to that 7-Eleven 3 times during that period. Sebastian Leopold was simply not in there. Decker shut off his DVR and sat down in a chair built into the wall. "Mr. Leopold," he said in a low voice, "do you recognize me?" Leopold seemed to be listening, but not actually hearing. "Do you recognize me?" Leopold gave a shake of the head. He moved his hands in odd ways in front of him. Decker observed the precise patterns the man was making. "You need an attorney," said Decker, and he patted his briefcase. Leopold stopped moving his hands and nodded at this. Decker took out his pad and pen. "Can you tell me what happened that night?" "Why?" There was a sudden caginess in the voice that slightly surprised Decker. He had interviewed many prisoners, many accused. Many were dumb as dirt and had committed crimes for reasons stupider than they were. But some were a lot smarter than folks gave them credit for. And maybe Leopold was one of those. "You need a defense. You've confessed to 3 murders.
"I'm guilty. I'd done it."
"You still need legal representation."
"Why?"
"It's just how the legal system works. So I need to know the facts."
"They're gonna execute me."
The tone was of a child confessing his expected punishment. The cagey prisoner had transformed into a little boy. Decker wondered if it were the drugs doing this to him, making a pinball game out of his thought process. "Is that what you want?"
Not up to me.
You're right. It's largely up to a judge and jury. But you still have input. So you want to tell me what happened? Decker checked his watch. 4 minutes had passed. And at any moment, someone might walk by who knew him. He turned so that his back was to the cell door.
I killed them, said Leopold simply.
He was staring dead at Decker now, and Decker was looking for any hint of recognition in the other man's eyes. If he saw it, what would he do? Strangle the man, like he might have done to his daughter? Leopold started moving his hands again. He looked like a conductor leading an orchestra that didn't exist. Decker watched for a few moments, then refocused. And why did you do that?
Dude pissed me off.
What dude?
The dude. Dude that lived there.
How'd he piss you off?
Just piss me off.
But how?
Didn't show me no respect.
You worked there? You were a customer there? At the 7-Eleven on DeSalle? Leopold ignored this and said,
Well, I got him, didn't I?
How'd you do that?
Killed his family.
No, I mean, how did you know where he lived?
Followed him.
How? Now, there came a caution in the man's eyes that Decker had not seen before.
I don't need to tell you shit. You a cop? Trying to trick me?
You confessed, Mr. Leopold. There's nothing left to trick. Do you see that? Leopold blinked and rubbed at his neck.
Yeah, I guess I see that.
And no, I'm not a cop.
So you followed him. How?
What do you mean, how?
Car, foot, bike? Ain't got no damn bike.
So a car?
If I ain't got a bike, I ain't got no car.
So on foot, then? Leopold nodded slowly and then studied Decker closely, perhaps to see his reaction to this. Decker wrote something down on his pad. He wiped a bead of sweat off his brow, even though it was cold in the basement cell. If he was discovered here, he could go to jail. And he didn't actually like talking to people, so the briefer the better. But he had to do this. This might be his only chance. So you found out where this dude lived, and then you planned to kill his family. But you waited a month or so. Why?
Who said I waited a month?
That's what you told the police. Leopold hunkered back down, the rat hiding among the crevices. Only there was no place to hide in here.
Okay, that's right. I had to plan it out, watch the place, see what the lay of the land was, so to speak.
Decker glanced at the tattoo. When were you in the Navy? Leopold's eyes flashed for just a second.
Who says I was?
Decker pointed at the tat. Two dolphins. Sailors often have those. You have it positioned so it won't show from under your uniform sleeve, per regulations. Leopold looked down at the tat as though it had betrayed him.
I'm not in the Navy.
So you got the lay of the land and then went there that night. Take me through it. Decker glanced over his shoulder at a sound, but it was only the jailer walking down the corridor. He rubbed another bead of sweat off his cheek.
Take you through it, parroted Leopold.
From the moment you got there to the moment you left. Let's start with how you got there.
Walked.
House address? Leopold hesitated.
It was a two-story, yellow siding, carport on the side.
How'd you get in?
Side screen door into the kitchen.
Remember any details of the room?
It was a damn kitchen, man. Stove, dishwasher, table, and chairs.
Remember the color of the walls?
No.
Decker glanced at his watch again. He had to speed this up, and his anxiety at being here was growing by the second. Who'd you kill first?
The dude. Thought it was the guy that dissed me. But I guess it wasn't.
How do you know that?
Pictures in the paper. After.
Go on.
He was at the kitchen table. Been drinking.
How do you know that? Leopold looked up, obviously irritated.
Why you keep asking me that? Because the cops will, the court will, the jury will want to know these things. Hell, I confessed! They can still try you. Leopold looked shocked by this. Why? To make themselves look good? How do you know he'd been drinking? Beer bottles on the table. How'd you kill him? He was a lot bigger than you. He was drunk. I took my knife and cut him, right here. He pointed at his neck. He was found in the adjoining room. Yeah, that's right. But see, he crawled in there after I cut him, bleeding like a bitch. Then he just didn't move again. Did he make any sounds? Leopold said, yeah, but not no loud ones. He pointed to his neck again. Got him here. Couldn't make much noise. Remember what he was wearing? Leopold looked blankly at him. Long time ago. Pants? Shirt? What next? Knew he had a family. Went to go kill them, too. Take me through it, Decker said calmly, though he was feeling the opposite. His heart was beating so fast he could feel the pulses in every part of his body, like he had 1,000 tiny hearts pumping madly. Almost there. Just hang on, Amos, just hang on. I went up the stairs. First room on the left, suggested Decker. Leopold pointed at him. Yep, the left. And I went in. She was in the bath. No, she was on the bed. That's right, on the bed. Pretty little thing. She had a nightie on. See right through it. Damn, the bitch looked good.
Decker gripped the edge of his chair and kept his eyes on Leopold. His wife had not been raped. That had been confirmed. But there had been something else.
So the light was on? Decker asked. What? You said you could see right through her nightie. I was assuming the light was on. Leopold looked unsure. No, I don't think it was. Then what? I stood over her while she was lying in the bed. Leopold looked crossly at him. Shit, man, can you let me tell it? Sorry, go ahead. I had my gun, I put it against her forehead, and I shot her.
What kind of gun?
Leopold answered right away. .45, Smith & Wesson.
Where'd you get it?
Stole it off some guy.
Guy have a name?
Leopold just shrugged.
Keep going.
Overhead, Decker could hear doors opening and feet trooping around. It seemed some of the cops were returning from the high school.
So I shot her. No, wait a minute. She did wake up, come to think. She sat up, she was starting to scream, that's right, and I shot her. Then the bitch fell off the bed.
Flat on the floor? Her whole body?
Leopold looked at him wearily.
Maybe part of her got hung up, foot or arm or something.
What then?
This was the critical point. The one that had not made it into the papers. The wound to her head was not the only one Cassie had suffered. It had been discovered during the autopsy. She had not been raped, but the outside of her genitals had been mutilated.
Knew he had a daughter. I went down the hall to her room. She was sleeping.
So you were done with the woman. Nothing else with her?
Leopold just stared at him. I told you what I'd done. I shot her. Dead.
Okay.
Then I went down the hall to the kid.
Wait a minute. The shot didn't wake the girl up?
Leopold looked puzzled again. No. Don't think so. She was sleeping.
Then what?
I took her out of the bed.
Why?
I just did. Wasn't thinking too clearly then. Took her to the bathroom.
Again, why? Not thinking too clearly?
That's right. Maybe I had to take a leak and didn't want her getting away.
Did you take a leak?
Don't remember.
And she didn't scream when she saw you?
No. She was scared, I guess. And I told her to be quiet.
Then?
Then I strangled her. put my hands around her neck and just squeezed tight as...
Decker put up a hand for him to stop. He looked away for a moment, the most brilliant blue blinding him. The color was so bright he thought he might be sick. It was like he was suffocating in sapphire.
"Hey, man, you okay?"
asked Leopold, with genuine concern on his face. Decker's forehead was drenched in perspiration. He slowly wiped it off.
"Okay. You killed her. Then what?"
Leopold looked unsure again.
Decker said, "Did you do anything with the body? Do something with her clothing?"
Leopold snapped his fingers. "That's right," he said, his face beaming, like he just got the answer right in algebra class. "I sat her up in the toilet, and I tied her, whatchamacallit?"
"Her robe belt?" prompted Decker.
"Right. Her robe belt around her and the toilet."
"Why?"
Leopold just stared at him.
Cause that's what I thought to do at the time."
"How'd you get away?"
"I went out the way I came in."
"Did you have a car?"
"No, I told you, I walked."
"Anybody see you?"
"Not that I know of."
"What'd you do with the gun?"
"Trash."
"Where?"
"Don't remember."
"The knife?"
Leopold shrugged.
"The same." "You tell anybody what you did?" asked Decker.
"Not till now."
"So why now?" Leopold shrugged again.
"They gonna fry my ass?"
"Lethal injection. Frying comes later."
"Huh?"
"In hell."
"Oh, yeah."
Leopold chuckled like he thought Decker was making a joke.
"That's a good one."
"So why come forward now?" asked Decker.
Leopold said, "Seemed as good a time as any. Ain't had nothing else going on."
Decker eyed a lump on the side of Leopold's neck. "What's that lump? You sick?"
Leopold reached up and gingerly touched it.
"Ain't nothing." "You have it checked out?" Leopold snorted.
"Yeah. I went to the Mayo Clinic on my jet, paid in cash."
Sarcasm. Interesting.
"If you were in the Navy, you might have health coverage."
Leopold shook his head.
"DD. Dishonorable discharge."
"So you were in the Navy?"
"Yeah,"
conceded Leopold. The sounds from above were getting louder. Decker checked his watch. 2 minutes left, and Brimmer seemed like the type who would show up right on time to escort him out.
"Any PTSD?"
"Any what?"
"Head problems, depression, from combat."
"I was never in combat."
"So you're just a sick son of a bitch who wipes out a family because somebody dissed you?"
Decker kept his voice level and calm. Leopold attempted to grin.
"I guess so. I'm bad news, man. Always have been. If my mama were alive, she could tell you. I'm just the shit. Screwed up every damn thing I ever touched in my whole life, no lie.
And when we check your military records, it'll show you were in the Navy as Sebastian Leopold." Leopold nodded, but absently, as though he weren't really agreeing with the statement. Decker leaned closer. "Let me ask it clearer. Is Sebastian Leopold your real name?"
"One I've been using."
"Since birth or more recently?"
"Not since birth, no."
"So why use that name, then, if it's not yours?"
"What's in a name, man? Just letters stuck together."
Decker pulled out his phone and, pointing it at Leopold, said, "Say cheese." He took Leopold's picture and then put his phone away. Then he held out a pen and a piece of paper. "Can you write down your name for me?"
"Why?"
"It's just for my records." Leopold took the pen and slowly wrote out his name. Decker took back the paper and the pen, stood, and said, "I'll be in touch." He went to the door and called for the jailer. When the man came and unlocked the door, Decker said, "Memory serves, there's a bathroom right down there, right?" He pointed the opposite way he had come in.
The jailer nodded. Yep, men's room is the first door.
Decker stuffed his pad and pen back into the briefcase and moved swiftly down the hall toward the John.
His change in plan had been prompted by the footsteps he'd heard clamoring down the steps, more than one pair, which meant that Brimmer had reinforcements, which meant they knew something was up. Decker walked past the door to the toilet and hung a left and then a right and hit another corridor. He was as familiar with the layout here as anyone. The hall ended in a door. He opened it and stepped out onto the loading dock. There was no one there, and only one truck backed up to the dock, its overhead door open, revealing the trailer to be empty. Decker skittered down a short stack of steps, and his new tight shoes hit asphalt. He turned left down an alley and emerged on the main street 10 seconds later. He hung another right and then a left at the next intersection. There was a hotel there and a cab stand. He told the lead cabbie, "Head north as far as $5 will take me." The cab dropped him off a while later. He hoofed it to a bus stop, and two rides later, he was back at the Residence Inn. As he stepped off the bus, he noted there were two police cars parked out in front and an official departmental car he knew had to belong to someone other than a street cop. Well, shit.
Chapter 10. The only good thing, figured Decker, was that he hadn't gotten the chance to retrieve his gun from the trash can along with his other clothes.
Walking in armed to the situation that was probably awaiting him would not be smart. He could run for it, he supposed, but that was probably what they were expecting. And he didn't like running. He just wasn't built for it anymore. So he loosened his tie, undid his top shirt button, let out a sigh of relief as his thick neck was freed from this glorified noose, and walked into the lobby of the Residence Inn. There he was immediately surrounded by four police officers. Decker studied them calmly. With what's going down at Mansfield, I didn't think you'd be able to spare the manpower.
Cut the shit, Decker, said a familiar voice.
Decker slid his gaze to the side. Hello, Mac.
That's Captain Miller to you.
I'm no longer on the force.
Show some respect or you might be in a jail cell before I'm done with you.
Mackenzie Miller was in his late 50s, puffy as a bullfrog and with similar coloring. He was as wide as he was tall, Decker in miniature. He was dressed in a suit, and when his coat moved open as Miller strode across the lobby, Decker could see the ubiquitous braces that held up the man's pants, though his substantial waistline, like Decker's, did that job fine all by itself. And why would that be? Miller gave him a patronizing look and then snapped,
Brimmer!
An embarrassed-looking Sally Brimmer hurried over from where she'd been standing next to a fake ficus plant with a thick coating of dust on the leaves.
Is this the man, Miss Brimmer?
That is undoubtedly him, sir,
she said quickly, narrowing her eyes and giving Decker a venomous look.
Thank you, said Miller, with an undertone of triumph.
He turned back to Decker. You came into the precinct today while we were undermanned because of the horrific situation at Mansfield, and using this situation to your advantage, you misrepresented yourself as a lawyer and gained admittance to Sebastian Leopold's jail cell. Well, that's one version, said Decker. Brimmer exclaimed,
That is the only version.
No, it's actually not, said Decker calmly. Miller spread his pudgy hands wide.
Then lay another on me, Decker. This has to be good.
I came into the precinct and asked to see Sebastian Leopold. I said he needed a lawyer. I never said I was a lawyer.
You gave me your card,
pointed out Brimmer. Decker's mind had already flown forward 6 moves. It was like he was playing chess and they were playing checkers. I gave you a card. It was Harvey Watkins. He's a member of the bar. I've done PI work for him. He handles criminal cases and he's good. I've sniffed out work for him before, no law against it.
but you represented yourself as this Watkins person.
Exclaimed Brimmer. Maybe you took it that way, but I never provided ID that said I was Harvey, and you never asked for my ID. I just gave you his card when you asked if I was an attorney.
But you said you knew Pete Rourke.
Said Brimmer in an exasperated tone. I do know Pete. Worked with him for years. Again, no crime against telling the truth.
But you...
Brimmer faltered and looked at Miller for help.
But the captain kept his gaze on Decker. He obviously wanted to see this play out.
Decker continued.
I guess since I had on a suit and tie and carried a briefcase, you just assumed I was a lawyer. I asked you for an interview with Leopold. You said I had 15 minutes. I took my allotted 15 minutes, and then I left Leopold sitting in his cell.
He looked around at the cops. So I'm not sure why the cavalry is here. Brimmer looked stunned. The cops looked unsure. Miller clapped his hands in appreciation and then pointed at the uniforms. You boys can head on. He hooked a thumb at Brimmer. And give the lady a ride back, will you?
Captain Miller.
Brimmer began, but he waved her off. Later, Brimmer. Just go with the fellas. They trooped out, leaving Miller and Decker staring at each other. Miller said, Can we talk about this? You need to focus on Mansfield, Mac. You want to come back and arrest me? I'll be right here. Miller nodded, and an appreciative smile broke over his features before disappearing. Let's sit for a few. Can I get a decent cup of coffee in this place? Decker led him over to his table in the restaurant off the lobby. Then he poured out two cups of coffee from a beverage stand set up against one wall and brought them back over, sitting down across from his former boss. How's Mansfield? Asked Decker.
Catastrophic. We're still finding stuff, bodies. The death count will go higher, no question.
What about Pete's grandson?
Miller shook his head.
I don't know, Amos. I don't have names yet. A bunch of cops' kids go there. It's the biggest high school we have.
And the shooter?
Miller ground his teeth.
He got away.
How?
Don't know yet. Everything is still developing.
Usually they eat their own bullet on sight. But not this time. It's like a school shooting a week now across the country. When's it going to end, Amos? You're a smart guy. When?
I'm not that smart.
Miller slowly nodded while drumming his fingers on the fake wood tabletop. In several quick bursts, he drank down his coffee. Rubbing his lips, he said, Why'd you do it, Amos?
Talking your way in to see that son of a bitch.
Wanted to eyeball him for myself.
A lot of ways to do that without doing what you did.
Brimmer shouldn't get in trouble.
Well, you taught her a very valuable lesson. Don't trust anybody.
He eyed Decker's suit and tie. I heard you'd gone down in the world. Was my info wrong?
I was a lot farther down than this.
You and Mary were a great team. Damn shame.
It's all a damn shame, isn't it?
Miller crumpled up his empty paper cup.
What'd you talk to Leopold about?
I have notes if you want to see them.
Miller loosened his tie.
I'd rather hear them. From you.
He's a strange guy.
If he killed three people in cold blood, I'd say he's very strange. I hope someone like that is always considered very strange, no matter how screwed up the world becomes.
He had some knowledge of the crime, but nothing he couldn't have gleaned from the papers, or...
Or what? Miller said quickly, his light blue eyes holding steadily on Decker's face.
Been told by someone who had more detailed knowledge of the crime. As in the person or persons who actually did it.
Do you see Leopold as our guy?
I don't see him one way or another. All I know is he walked in early this morning and confessed. What else?
Decker said, He was in the Navy. I noted the tat and he finally admitted that he was. Sebastian is probably not his real name. Checking with DOD should tell us who he is. Guy has a lump on his neck. Doesn't seem to be causing him pain, but it might be cancerous.
he was confused on some of the major details at the scene. For example, he couldn't seem to remember which side of the hall the first bedroom was on. I suggested left, he agreed, when it's actually on the right. That's probably not that big of a deal. But then he said he shot Cassie while she was sleeping and then changed his story to shooting her after she woke up. The wound was a contact. I don't see how he does that if she's awake and screaming and maybe fighting him. And she was found on the floor. I think he remembered that, and he changed his story to reflect it. And he didn't mention what else was done to her. Miller nodded. He obviously knew what Decker was referring to. Go on. The guy is a little cagey, but not all there. He sort of comes and goes. I don't think his memory is that good. Also, he's a druggie. Needle tracks on his arm are fresh. Go on. Decker had already decided not to tell him everything he had discovered or thought about. His gut told him to hold things back, see how it all played out. He said I dissed him at my neighborhood 7-Eleven. He didn't say if he worked there or not. Apparently he told you guys the same thing. The 7-Eleven. Now that store? I only ever drove there. Never walked. He doesn't have a car. But he said he followed me back to my house. So how did he do it? And I've never seen the guy before. I would have remembered if someone had a problem with me. Miller considered all this while he rubbed one hand down his tie and fiddled with his tie clip. You never forget anything, do you? Decker had never told anyone about what had happened to him. When his condition had been diagnosed, he'd been sent to a research facility outside of Chicago for additional testing. He had spent months there meeting others with similar abilities, both men and women. They had done numerous group sessions together. Some had been better adjusted than others. Some had really deep problems adjusting to what they were. Some may never have adjusted. To his knowledge, Decker had been the only one not born with his condition. The others in the group seemed to have lived with it much longer than he had, which was both a positive and a negative, he supposed. Everyone forgets stuff, he said.
I had you checked out. I ever tell you that?
Decker shook his head.
Knew you were a jock. Saw that play on TV.
You mean on YouTube?
No, I mean I was watching the game when you got laid out.
Hardest hit I've ever seen.
I don't know how you survived it, Amos. I really don't.
Why'd you watch the game?
You're a damn good player for Mansfield.
Best QB we've ever had. Kick-ass of a linebacker on the D side.
You were fast for your size. You were a good college player. And far as I know, you were the only person from the humble town of Burlington to ever play in the NFL. So yeah, I watched the game. Would have gone to it if I could have.
Well, good thing you did watch, since that play was my only one in the NFL. Miller continued. And I checked your scores at the police academy and your test for detective grade. Why'd you do that?
Because I was curious about you, Amos. Don't think the department didn't notice your success rate as a cop and then a detective. You had something extra that the others didn't have.
Mary is a good cop.
Yes, she is. Good, but not great. Good, but not perfect. But see, your scores at the academy and later the detective's exams were perfect. You didn't miss a single question. They tell me it's the first time in the history of the state. Then I went back to your college days. You were a good student, but a B student. Nothing perfect about your record back then. Football didn't leave a lot of time for studying.
Miller rubbed his chin and looked thoughtful. Let's get back to it. What else you got?
Decker could feel the migraine marching up the back of his neck. The lights in the room were dim, but right now they felt like three-ring circus illumination. The color blue, terrifyingly electric, was starting to seep out of all corners of life with the goal of converging on his very soul. He could sense it all building.
I don't think Leopold is our guy, he managed to say. I already knew that before I sat down across from you.
How's that? Decker asked.
You didn't kill him before you left the precinct, because that's why you went in there, right? size the guy up, ask your questions, stare him down, read his mind, see if he was the guy. And if you decided he was, no more Leopold. He looked Decker over.
Easy enough. Football player, strong as a horse. He might be way out of shape now, but you are still one big dude. Leopold wouldn't have had a chance.
You can't arrest someone for thinking about committing a crime.
No,
and sometimes that's more a curse than a blessing. So why the riot act with the cops and Brimmer here?
I'm the captain, but I have bosses too.
So this was a CYA visit? Miller surged to his feet and adjusted his tie, sliding the knot back up to his Adam's apple. Decker looked up at him, the migraine starting to beat against all sides of his brain. He half-closed his eyes to keep out even the dim light that felt like a million incandescent bulbs. So what are you going to do?
With you? Nothing.
Now Leopold will be arraigned based on his confession. After that, we either confirm his story or we prove it false. I'll seriously consider all that you've told me. At the end of the investigation, he either stays locked up, goes to trial, or cops a plea. Or he goes free. And if someone got him to do this?
Might give us an opportunity. I'm sure you thought of that already.
Will you let me know what you decide with Leopold?
You're no longer on the force. I wish you were, but you're not.
It was the choice I had to make at the time. Miller rubbed his nose and buttoned his jacket.
Well, different times call for different choices.
He started to leave but turned back. He held up one finger.
Today was your freebie, Amos.
You only get one, so you have none left. Don't forget that. And forget Sebastian Leopold is even on the same planet as you. We'll take it from here.
You screw me over on that. I'm no longer your ally. I will crucify you. Have a good one.
Amos Decker sat there for a minute and then rushed back to his room, locked the door, closed all the curtains, lay on the bed with a pillow over his face to block out all the remaining light, and succumbed to the beast devouring his vastly altered mind. Chapter 11. The heavy clouds ate away at the fragile sky until there was no significant light left, although the sun was up there somewhere, diminished and vacant. It was akin to staring at a 40-watt light bulb while wearing a gauzy blindfold. For Decker, who was deeply influenced by color in everything, it seemed the only one left in the world right now was gray. He had his hands in his pockets as the chilly wind bit into him. He had recovered from the migraine, gone to a local Wendy's and gulped down a Coke, letting the sugar drain the last vestiges of the discomfort away, an acid wash on dreary, stained metal, and allowing the sweat to dry off his pores. He had then bussed back downtown and retrieved his gun and clothes from the trash can. Fortunately, they had not been discovered. He could not afford to lose his only other set of work clothes any more than he could his only weapon. Now he was standing there in his old clothes, braced against a stiff wind and staring over at Mansfield High. It had been built, along with thousands of other schools across the country, in a post-war construction boom. The birth rate had spiked in 1946, and those kids would need to go to high school at some point. That's what being away from home fighting a war for 4 years did to a man. It made him horny as hell. The wives of America's returning veterans probably hadn't slept for an entire year. Mansfield was 3 stories high, all brick, and time had not been kind to it. Windows were boarded up or broken. Mortar had leached out from the neat lines around the rectangular bricks and mottled the school's facade like meaningless graffiti. The grounds were full of chickweed and dirt patches. The asphalt cracked, and the chain-link fences mangled, with gates hanging off twisted, rusted hinges. The place now looked more like an abandoned state mental asylum than a high school. It had been built principally as a school for children of the military personnel who worked at the Army base right next door. The base had been one of the biggest employers in Burlington, and servicing all those soldiers was an economic boost to the area. And then, the Pentagon downsized, and the base in Burlington was one of the first to go. Now, the defunct Army base just sat there 100 yards from Mansfield High, behind high chain-link fences and walls of vegetation that had partially reclaimed the land it was on. Burlington had never recovered from the soldiers pulling out, and the later economic downturn was the last nail in the town's coffin. Today, like many other schools, Mansfield was underfunded, beaten down, discipline was hard to find, teachers didn't stay long, and drug and alcohol abuse was rampant. The student population was less than half of what it had once been, and graduation rates were heading south as fast as snowbirds fleeing to Florida before winter set in. Burlington, even without the military base, had once been a prosperous manufacturing town like thousands of other communities dotted across the middle of the country, building what America and the rest of the world needed. Now, with all the manufacturing outsourced overseas, the only thing one could build here was misery. There were two grocery store chains here. From what Decker had seen, the two most popular food items purchased there were Hamburger Helper by the kilo and Sugary Orange Pop by the barrel. And the fast food places also did brisk business, fattening both the young and old to impossible degrees and foretelling diabetes, cancer, stroke, and heart disease stats blowing right through the roof. And didn't he know that firsthand? In Burlington, the few rich lived in gated communities on the west side of town and pretty much never strayed from there. Everybody else lived on the three other compass points. The homeless lived on the streets in ratty sleeping bags, old blankets, and cardboard condos, just like I did. Decker had attended school at Mansfield over 25 years ago. Some of the trophies bearing his name were still in the gym's locked glass cabinet. He had been an outstanding high school athlete, lettering in three different sports. He was simply bigger, faster, and stronger than anybody else. He had been popular, dated all the hot girls, slept with a number of them, done okay in the classroom, and everyone had thought him a lock for a pro career. How wrong they had been.
He had been a good, but far from great, college player. And then the funnel narrowed even more. He had gone undrafted on pro draft day because there were hundreds of prospects far better than he was. He had taken that as a personal attack. Decker had worked his way out of the Cleveland Browns by busting his ass on the practice field, sacrificing his body in idiotic ways that had come back to haunt him in his 40s, and being the last to leave the film room. For all that effort, his career had lasted one regular season play and had left him with a brain permanently changed. Something good had come out of it, at least. He had met Cassie while he was rehabbing his other injuries, because, as it turned out, the hit had not only addled his brain, both cleats had stuck in the turf as Dwayne LaCroix leveled him.
The result was a broken right femur, a blown-out ACL on his left knee, and a torn MCL on his right. Pretty much the whole package, the surgeon had told him. Well, in for a dime, in for a dollar.
Cassie had been a newly minted physical therapist attending him.
He had worked his butt off to get back right. His leg and knees eventually healed. His brain was what it was. But she had been with him every step of the way, encouraging when necessary, and bullying her patient when encouragement failed to motivate. During that time, he and Cassie had fallen as deeply in love as he imagined anyone could. After a stint at the Institute outside Chicago, where they studied people who had extraordinary mental abilities, he and Cassie had gotten engaged and then married and moved back to his hometown. He had previously given a lot of thought to what he would do in the future, and he had come back here with the express purpose of enrolling in the police academy. The classwork was a cakewalk with his new and improved and utterly infallible memory. His physical skills, though somewhat diminished by his injuries, were still far superior to almost all in his academy class. He had sailed through the process, was sworn in, and got his badge and gun.
9 years later, he was promoted to detective. For nearly 10 years, he had investigated major crimes against the good citizens of Burlington, although most of the crimes had also been committed by the not-so-good citizens of Burlington, with the occasional outsider thrown into the mix.
They had wanted a large family, but had struggled to conceive a child. They spent money they didn't have on specialists, and at long last, Cassie had become pregnant, and they had Molly. She would be their only child. The pregnancy had nearly killed Cassie, and a complication had required surgery that had rendered her incapable of conceiving again. They had named her after Decker's mother. His parents had both perished in a car crash while Decker was in college, so Molly didn't have paternal grandparents. But she had carried her grandma's name, carried it all the way to her premature death at the hands of perhaps Sebastian Leopold.
He stared up at the brick fortress that Mansfield had become. Crazy-angled police tape was everywhere, like a spider's yellow web, looking venomous and terrifying.
There were cop cars and forensic trucks and black trucks with no windows standing ready for the body bags. For Decker was certain the corpses were still in the school. Except for those injured and needing medical attention, he didn't subtract anything from a crime scene until it was thoroughly gone over, photographed, measured, and adequately poked